The views expressed on this program are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of WVUD or the University of Delaware. Welcome to the Music Room on WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark. Each week, WVUD hosts different artists to talk about the music they play and the lives they lead. Stay tuned for the Music Room on WVUD.
You're here with Liz Webb in the Music Room on WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark. On January 29th, I met with Christopher Chu, lead singer and guitarist of the indie rock trio Pop Etc., before their Bowery Ballroom show in New York City. That same day, the band released their second album titled Souvenir. Here's a single off the new record called What Am I Becoming? Pop Etc. began their career in 2005 at the University of California, Berkeley, under the name The Morning Benders. In 2012, the group moved from Berkeley to Brooklyn, adjusted their lineup, and changed their name to Pop Etc. Here's what Chris had to say about the band's big transition.
We realized how precious the members that we had found, because the lineup of The Morning Benders had changed several times over the years. And when my brother joined the band, it changed the dynamic a lot. And then our drummer, Julie, and I played with the longest out of anyone. So just between the three of us, it really feels like a family. And when we changed the name, that was the kind of finalized lineup, and we know that it's not going to change because we're just very tight-knit. So I guess in that way, it's just become much more collaborative and more of a band, whereas in the beginning I was really the only full-time member through the whole thing, so I was kind of steering the ship.
Okay.
So yeah.
And what is the, why did you decide on the name Puppet Sitter?
There's a lot of reasons. I mean, I like the idea of the band name as kind of something that, well, I like it for one, just being descriptive. Like when people ask what kind of music we play, I just say pop, et cetera, which is
right.
Nice. Because I think that it does encapsulate what we're doing. But I also like it just kind of being something bigger than a band. I liked it as a kind of concept that we can do a lot with. So, for example, like we're putting out this record now on Pop, et cetera records, and we do all these limited edition t-shirts that are kind of, it's almost like a fashion company or something. And I like that it can kind of have all these different arms connected to it and all be through the Pop, et cetera. I'm hesitant to say brand because that's like a dirty word, but you know, the Pop, et cetera, whatever, umbrella.
Okay, awesome. Yeah. So kind of backpacking off that, do you feel that there has been a change in your sound since the switch?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I kind of try to explain to people that we always were interested in changing. So we did change our sound at, it coincided with us changing our name, but for instance, like the last Pop, Etc. album and the new one, I feel like they're quite different as well. So for us, just as a band, and for me as a songwriter, I grew up idolizing artists that changed a lot. And like, I love Bowie, he's one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah.
I love Beck, who's like,
okay,
I feel like is carrying the torch for Bowie kind of almost now that he's gone or something. But I just love those kind of chameleon artists.
Right.
And for us, that's just how we're inspired. We're inspired to try different things. So we're not really, we don't want to get stuck on one sound.
Take
So which bands or artists, like, influence you, do you think?
Yeah. I mean, it's just so many at this point. It's hard to answer that question. Bowie is an amazing artist, and, like, from the standpoint of his career, that's kind of the most enviable position to be in. It's just an incredible career, and he's an incredible everything. I mean, just such a great songwriter and artist and visionary. But, I mean, recently we've been really digging deep into the 80s. Like,
I hear it on the album, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, we knew a lot of those bands before, but we never went in and did the research and found all the albums. And there's a lot of songs, like, you hear songs by Tears for Fears or even, like, Madonna or Cyndi Lauper or something. And everyone knows those big songs, but there's so many albums. There's tons of albums and tons of songs, and there's a lot of good stuff that just hasn't been really written into the musical canon yet.
Right.
I think because the 80s are still relatively recent, you know, compared to, for instance, the 60s, where if you go on RollingStone.com or something, like, the 60s music history is pretty well mapped out if you're going to learn about it. Whereas the 80s, there's, like, a lot to explore, and in that way it's kind of fun for us because we felt like we could kind of write our own musical history or something and find what spoke to us, you know?
So how is the Brooklyn music scene different from the one in California since you've moved?
I mean, as soon as we moved to New York, we felt at home here because we're a very driven band and we work really hard, and for this album we spent years just writing all the time, and we're really into the craft of songwriting and all that. And when we came to New York, we just found a lot of bands that were very serious about what they're doing.
Right.
And in the Bay Area, there's kind of a more just chill vibe of, you know, we'll just be a band and play some songs and kind of see what happens. And I identify with that as, like, a human, because I'm a Californian and I have that kind of energy sometimes. But as a band and as an artist, we do feel, I think, more at home here in New York.
Okay, awesome.
I say that now, who knows, maybe we'll get back to California someday. Yeah.
In addition to their unique revival of 80s new wave and their enthusiasm toward musical experimentation, Pop Etc.'s success is greatly attributed to the powerful dynamic between Chris and his younger brother, John.
When he joined, it kind of, the band transitioned from being a kind of solo project to a real collaboration, because with John, we see things so eye to eye. We just have never fought growing up. We always got along, and he's very precocious, and I was always playing music for him and movies and stuff, and he just, even though he was younger, he got it quickly, you know. So when we are making music, it's hard to articulate ideas in music because it's an abstract, ambiguous language, but with John I can just be like, oh, you know, that kind of thing from this or whatever. He understands all the reference points, and it's easy, it's nice, it feels natural. Not like Oasis.
Oh yeah,
it's the opposite of Oasis.
We were talking about that before.
Yeah, people actually have asked me that before. Why I'm saying it's the opposite.
That's good. Okay, so in regards to the album, so you said it's been a while since you released your last one in 2012, so it's been a while since you released an album. So what inspired the development of that?
A lot's happened in that time. We made a decision pretty early on that we weren't going to try to make an album quickly, which is, it sounds kind of obvious just stating it like that, but most bands I know, there's a certain momentum just in the album cycles of being in a band, and especially if you're not writing songs and stuff, the other band members get pretty antsy. They're waiting around. They want to go tour and they want to do stuff. But I just knew that we had felt pretty burnt out from doing that kind of cycle, and I knew we just wanted to take our time. So I think doing that just allowed us to explore a lot. We wrote more songs for this album than I've written for anything. I mean, we wrote hundreds of songs, and probably very different albums could have come out of that. But what ended up happening is we kind of all three found this thing together that we were excited about. So I sent them so many songs that they just were like, we're not really feeling that, or not connecting with it, or we don't know, it's cool, but we don't know, like, how we would contribute to it. So we got rid of all that and found these songs that all three of us could infuse our kind of personality and lives into. And so it feels like all three of our lives wrapped up, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of why we called it Souvenir, because it feels like the last few years of what all of us were going through, and it's now in this little time capsule on a record.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What tracks would you say you're most proud of off of the new album?
I mean, that's like kind of picking a favorite child, but I love, I mean, Vice, second song, and What Am I Becoming? Mm-hmm. Both those songs have really interesting journeys, and I love them just because of how they turned out so differently than where they started. Vice is one of those songs that I sent to them, and they were just like, not really feeling it. And I ended up, my iTunes was on shuffle, and it came on like months later, and I was, oh yeah, I like that song, or there was something about it. So I brought it back and kind of reworked it. I rewrote the melodies and changed the, it wasn't called Vice at the time, I changed, I think it was called, I can't remember what it was called, but changed the whole lyric and everything, and then it somehow just clicked, and I played it for them, and they loved it, and we immediately started working it again. And but it went through, and this is the same as What Am I Becoming, they went through so many versions. We probably had 15 different versions that sounded completely different. So now I think, for me, those songs like represent having faith in that process and feeling confident that'll pay off. So I guess they stick out for that reason.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I really love the bass line and What Am I Becoming,
yeah,
the beginning part.
Thank you. Yeah.
So good.
Yeah, that was, Vice as well had like the kind of groove to it.
Yeah.
And I think that's what kept me wanting to work on it more, yeah, you know, even though some of the stuff in the early version wasn't working.
We'll be right back.
Souvenir was recorded in your Brooklyn apartment.
Yeah.
Did you do that on purpose?
Well, when we decided we were going to take that much time, we just knew we needed to figure out some way to record it that wasn't going to be in a studio forever, because it's just financially completely not feasible.
Right.
But also because the way we wanted to make music, it's like doing these songs over and over and geeking out over one part and really tuning it in. It's hard to do that in a studio because you have engineers and people around and you just feel bad in making them do 1,000 takes of something. Yeah. And when I'm in my house with our little makeshift studio, I can just geek out over singing a vocal line a certain way and no one's going to bother me and tell me, you know, we should be moving on or not using the time efficiently.
Right.
And it allowed us to, like, make a really personal space for us to do these songs in, whereas studios often feel very clinical and cold. So I think it impacted the record in a huge way.
Yeah.
And I don't think we'll ever go back to fully working in a studio. We'll always want to bring it back home and do that.
Do you think it impacted the sound also? Like,
Yeah, it did. I mean, it's a little harder to articulate.
Right.
Because we went through so many different things and we're tweaking so many things. I can hear the different moods of those songs really strongly, and I attribute that to working at home because I can just wake up and go straight to working on music.
Right.
Whereas when you have studio days, you kind of psych yourself out and kind of get into this mindset of, we're going to the studio, we got to do, you know, 1, 2, 3 and cross things off the list and whatever. But in my apartment, I just wake up and maybe I'm feeling mellow that day or sad or happy or whatever, and each day I would still go work on music, so it kind of gets infused in there. So I think that impacted the sound, but again, it's hard to point out specific things. It's pretty amorphous.
What do you hope listeners will take away from your new album?
Part of why we called it Souvenir, as well, is that we love being able to give it to someone else as an experience or a souvenir for them to kind of live alongside. So I'm sure you guys have albums as well that do this for you, but I have these albums that are just so intertwined with certain times in my life and certain experiences. And for me, that would be the dream, would be for kind of for kids or younger kids finding it to live alongside it and then be able to put it on in 10 years and like get transported back to that time. So maybe it'll become a souvenir for other people too.
Thank you all for tuning in to The Music Room on 91.3 WVUD.
Thanks for listening to The Music Room on WVUD. For more information about this and other episodes of The Music Room, including selections from the interviews and information about the music, visit us online at sites.udel.edu/TMR. Tune in next Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. for another episode of The Music Room on WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark.